this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Skilled Nursing Facility Prospective Payment System Minimum Data Set 3.0 and Resource Utilization Group Version 4 Policies and Clarifications National Provider Call. All lines will remain in a listen-only mode until the question and answer session. This call is being recorded and transcribed. If anyone has any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Thank you for your participation in today's call. I will now turn the call over to Leah Nguyen. Thank you, ma'am. You may begin.
Thank you, Holly. Hello, I am Leah Nguyen from the Provider Communications Group here at CMS. I would like to welcome you to the Skilled Nursing Facility Prospective Payment System Minimum Dataset 3.0 and Resource Utilization Group Version 4 Policies and Clarifications National Provider Call. CMS subject matter experts will provide a brief overview of the policies, along with clarifications on the SNF PPS FY 2012 policies related to the Minimum Dataset 3.0. A question and answer session will follow the presentation. Before we get started, there are a few items that I need to cover. There is a slide presentation for this call. If you have not already done so, this presentation may be downloaded now from the SNF PPS website located at www.cms.gov/snfpps. At the left side of the webpage, click on FY 2012 RUG 4 Training and Education and scroll down the page to the download section. Also, this call is being recorded and transcribed. We have a lot to cover today, so without further delay, we will get started. At this time, I would like to introduce Jeanette Cranis, Acting Director of the Division of Institutional Post-Acute Care. I will now turn the call over to Ms. Cranis.
Thanks, Leah. Good afternoon. As Leah said, my name is Jeanette Cranis, and you probably all are familiar with Sheila Lambowitz and her recent retirement. So I'm stepping into Sheila's shoes, at least temporarily, and wanted to welcome you to today's call and thank you for participating. Today's call represents the third training call we've offered on the FY12 MDS 3.0 and RUG 4 policy changes. As indicated, slides, transcripts, and other materials related to the two previous calls are available on the SNF PPS website. The questions received during the registration period for today's call ranged from wanting to understand the basic policies to referring to very specific situations. Today's call will provide a general overview of the policies, and therefore some of the presentation will overlap with previous presentations. However, we've received questions and feedback from the stakeholder community since our last calls and have updated our material to include additional clarifications and examples. We've incorporated this information responding to your questions in a generalizable way. For those questions that are less generalizable, we will respond by either updating the clarifications document on the SNF PPS webpage or, in some instances, responding specifically to the questioners. So please, we do plan on updating the clarifications memo if necessary after today's call. Give us a little while to incorporate changes and get them up, say a week or so. We appreciate your patience as we try to be as responsive as possible to addressing all of your questions about these complex changes that are now being implemented. At this point, I'll turn it over to Penny Gershman, who's going to start going through some of the policies for you.
Thanks, Jeanette. Thank you for joining us for today's call. We have a full agenda, and you should be able to follow along with the slides provided. Once again, if you came late to the call, if you haven't downloaded the slides yet, they can be found at www.cms.gov/snfpps, and on the left side of the page, click on the FY 2012 RUG 4 Education and Training page. Once you're on that page, scroll down to the download section, and that will contain the slides for today's National Provider Call. As Jeanette said, since the last National Provider Call in August, the RAI manual has been updated, and we've issued several clarifications based on the questions we've received. The links to the manual and the clarifications can be found at the end of this slide presentation. Our agenda for today's call includes the following topics: the new MDS assessment schedule, the allocation of group therapy minutes, the revised student supervision provision, the end of therapy OMRA and new revision items, the change of therapy OMRA, and finally, we will discuss several clarifications of the policy changes that we have made. Beginning with slide number 3, we'll talk about the revised MBS assessment schedule. By now, you should all be using the new MBS assessment schedule, which went into effect on October 1st. Once again, we've made these changes to the schedule in order to reduce the amount of duplicated information gathered during overlapping look-back periods. The scheduled MBS assessments should now have the following ARD windows. The 5-day assessment hasn't changed. The ARD window is still days 1 to 5, with days 6 through 8 as grace days. The 14-day assessment should have an ARD window of days 13 or 14, with grace days of days 15 through 18. The 30-day assessment should have an ARD window of days 27 through 29, with grace days of 31 through 60. The 60-day assessment should have an ARD window of days 57 through 59 with grace days of 60 through 63. And the 90-day assessment should have an ARD window of days 87 through 89 with grace days of 90 through 93. The scheduled assessments will continue to pay for the same days as in the past, and you can see the full charts on slide number 3. Many providers have asked about the general policy from combining scheduled and unscheduled TPS assessments. Before we do so, let's define what we mean by scheduled and unscheduled assessments. We are considering scheduled assessments to mean the regularly scheduled TPS assessments, the 5-day, the 14-day, the 30-day, and so forth. Unscheduled TPS assessments are the start of therapy OMRA, the end of therapy OMRA, and the new change of therapy OMRA. The general combination policy is as follows. If the ARD for an unscheduled TPS assessment falls within the ARD window, including grace days, of a scheduled TPS assessment, and the ARD for the scheduled assessment would be set for a day after that of the unscheduled assessment, then the assessments must be combined. The example on slide number 4 illustrates this policy. If the ARD for an end of therapy OMRA is day 14 of the resident's stay, and the 14-day scheduled TPS assessment is not set for prior to day 14, then the assessments must be combined and facilities should use the appropriate AI code to indicate the combined assessment. This policy clarification has provided us with questions from a number of different providers, and we'll address them on slide number 5. When combining a scheduled and unscheduled assessment, the scheduled assessment item set should be used. However, once again, the AI code should reflect that this is a combined assessment, so payment can reflect that. The ARD for the combined assessment is the ARD that would have been used for the ARD of the unscheduled assessment. Going back to our example on slide 4, in this example, the ARD for the EOT OMRA was day 14, and the ARD for the 14-day scheduled TPS assessment had not yet been set. In this case, the two would be combined with an ARD date of day 14. Finally, if for some reason the ARD is mistakenly set for a day that is after the ARD for the unscheduled assessment, then the scheduled assessment is deemed invalid and payment is set as if the assessments had been combined properly. Moving on to slide number 6, we'll talk about group therapy. As stated in the FY12 final rule, the Part A definition of group therapy has been modified. Group therapy is now defined as therapy provided simultaneously to 4 patients, regardless of payer source, for performing the same or similar activities. We'd like to remind you that this is the Part A definition of group therapy. We use the term regardless of payer source in our definition because there may be group therapy participants who are not covered under Part A. Nevertheless, the group is still a valid group. For example, a physical therapy group may consist of 2 Part A patients and 2 Part B patients who are all performing the same activity. For the Part A patients, this is considered a valid group. For the Part B patients, the group still must adhere to the definition of group therapy for Part B. The RAI manual makes a distinction between Part A and Part B patients as a reminder that the payment policies for group therapy for each provider are different. Continuing with the explanation of the modified Part A definition of group therapy, facilities must plan for groups to include no more and no less. If for some reason a group is planned and at the last minute a participant can't make it, the group may still continue. However, the minutes will still be allocated and divided by 4, which brings us to slide number 7. The allocation of group therapy occurs as follows. A therapist will treat a group of 4 patients. For each Part A patient, the full time spent in the group will be reported on the MDS. The RUG-4 grouper will then allocate those minutes for each patient. For example, a speech therapist sees a group of 4 for a communication group, the last 60 minutes. Those 60 minutes will be entered in the MDS under group minutes. The RUG-4 grouper will then allocate those minutes, and 15 minutes will be the RTM, or reimbursable therapy minutes, that can be counted towards the calculation of the RUG classification of each Part A patient. On slide number 8, we outline the new therapy student supervision policy. As of October 1st, students are no longer required to be under the line of sight supervision of their supervising therapist. Once again, we remind you that the supervising therapists are expected to exercise their own judgment regarding the level of supervision a student may require. Additionally, the APTA, AOTA, and ASHA have provided suggestive guidelines for student supervision that can be found on our website at cms.gov/SNFPPS on the spotlight page in the downloads under student supervision guidelines. Instructions for coding student and therapy time can be found in the RAI manual in Chapter 3, Section 0. The end of therapy OMRA continues to be a hot topic of discussion for SNF providers. Let's discuss this. As written on slide number 9, an end of therapy, or EOT OMRA, must be completed when a resident who is in a RUG-4 rehab or rehab plus extensive services group did not receive any therapy services for 3 or more consecutive calendar days for any reason. The purpose of the EOT OMRA is to adequately capture non-therapy days in a SNF. The ARD for an EOT OMRA must be set for day 1, 2, or 3 after the date of the last therapy session. For example, if a resident receives therapy on Monday, which was day 17 of her stay, but missed therapy on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, the ARD for the EOT OMRA would be set for either Tuesday, which is day 18 of her stay, Wednesday, which is day 19, or Thursday, which is day 20 of her stay. An EOT OMRA is expected to be performed for 3 consecutive missed therapy days, regardless of whether therapy is missed on a weekday, weekend, or holiday. Beginning October 1st of this year, the resumption item was added to the end of therapy OMRA. As explained on slide 10, an EOT with resumption, or an EOTR, is not a new assessment. Rather, it is an EOT assessment with a resumption item filled in. The EOTR may be used when a resident will resume therapy at the same therapy level as prior to the discontinuation of therapy, and when the resumption of therapy occurs no more than 5 days after the last day therapy was provided. Let's consider an example. Mr. G has therapy on Friday, which is day 16 of his Part A SNF stay. The facility he is in does not provide weekend therapy, so he misses therapy on Saturday and Sunday. Monday, Mr. G's family comes to visit and he refuses therapy. Since Mr. G missed 3 days of therapy, an EOT OMRA is required. The facility can choose to set the ARD for day 1, 2, or 3 after the last day of therapy. As a reminder, Mr. G last had therapy on Friday. Therefore, the ARD for the EOT OMRA may be set for Saturday, Sunday, or Monday. The facility believes that barring any unforeseen circumstances, Mr. G will resume therapy on Tuesday, and since his lapse in therapy was not caused by any medical reason, his therapy is expected to resume at the same RUG level as prior to the lapse in therapy. Therapy with resumption, with a date of resumption, which is item 00450B, filled out with Tuesday's date. But how is an EOTR billed? Slide 11 illustrates this. When an EOTR is used, the facility will bill a non-therapy RUG for all days of missed therapy. In Mr. G's case, that would be Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Beginning Tuesday, which is the day Mr. G resumed therapy, the facility would bill the therapy RUG that was in effect prior to his lapse in therapy. As a side point, it should be noted that facilities are not required to consider possible ADL changes when determining whether resumption of therapy will occur at the same level as prior to the lapse in therapy. As long as a therapy plan of care remains the same for that RUG level, and therapy has resumed no more than 5 days following the last day of therapy, the EOTR can be done. Slide 12 addresses several clarifications that we'd like to make regarding the end of therapy OMRA. First of all, if a resident is discharged from the Medicare Part A portion of the stay prior to missing 3 full days of therapy, then the EOT OMRA would not be required. Obviously, this only applies in cases where the resident was receiving some type of skilled service for each of those days prior to discharge. If therapy was the only skilled service that the resident was receiving, then the discharge from both Part A and therapy would occur concurrently. The second clarification on slide 12 addresses EOTR billing. In cases where an EOTR is completed, the HIPS code used to bill the days affected by the assessment should include the AI code used on the EOTR, with the second character being A, B, or C. Now I'll pass the call on to John Kane, who will be talking about the COT OMRA, as well as some other recent clarifications. On a personal note, I would like to thank John for not having his wife gone into labor prior to this call so that I don't have to do this part.
Thank you, Benny. And yes, my wife is not in labor yet, although if you hear loud footsteps, that would be me running out the door. So let's begin with the change of therapy, or COT OMRA. As outlined on slide 13, we will discuss a variety of topics related to the COT OMRA, such as when a COT OMRA must be completed and how the COT OMRA will affect provider billing. We'll also discuss some recent clarifications of the COT OMRA policy. Moving to slide 14, the purpose of the COT OMRA is to capture changes in the provision of therapy services to SNF residents outside the standard observation period associated with the scheduled PPS assessments. In other words, the COT OMRA is designed to highlight when the therapy provided to a resident in a given week is not reflective of the therapy the patient should be receiving given the RUG-4 therapy level in which the patient is currently classified. As a formal definition, a COT OMRA must be completed for a resident receiving any amount of skilled therapy services if the therapy received by the resident during the COT observation period does not reflect the RUG-4 classification level on the patient's most recent PPS assessment used for payment. Now, there are clearly some terms and jargon in that definition that should be explained further, which I will go over now. The COT observation period refers to a successive 7-day window beginning the day following the ARD of the resident's last PPS assessment used for payment. For example, if a provider were to set the ARD for a resident's 14-day assessment for day 14, then the COT observation period would begin on day 15 and end on day 21, assuming no intervening assessments. If there were an intervening assessment used for payment, whether it be a scheduled or unscheduled PPS assessment, then the COT observation period would be reset based on the ARD of the intervening assessment. We say successive windows because the possibility of a COT OMRA must be considered every 7 days for patients receiving any amount of skilled therapy services. If during a given week, the patient receives an amount of skilled therapy appropriate to their determined therapy level, then the provider need not complete a COT OMRA at that time and will instead begin considering therapy provided in the following or succeeding week. I should point out that the COT observation period begins on the day following the ARD of the last PPS assessment used for payment, except in cases where the previous assessment is an EOT OMRA with the resumption items completed, or EOTR. In such cases, the COT observation period begins on the resumption date listed in item 0450B on the EOT OMRA. The definition also refers to therapy not being reflective of the patient's RUG-4 therapy classification level. But what exactly does this mean? In other words, how should a facility determine if a COT OMRA must be completed? As we discuss on slide 15, providers should perform an informal change of therapy evaluation to consider whether or not the intensity of the therapy services provided to the resident during the COT observation period changed sufficiently. We say this is an informal evaluation because there is no paperwork required for this evaluation. Providers are free to decide for themselves what process they feel is most appropriate to determine the need for a COT OMRA. However, in considering changes to the intensity of therapy, providers must consider changes to all therapy category qualifying conditions, such as total reimbursable therapy minutes, or RTM, number of days therapy was provided, or the number of therapy disciplines. Just to clarify, The term reimbursable therapy minutes, or RTM, refers to the minutes used to determine the resident's RUG-4 classification. Effectively, a patient's RTM are his or her individual therapy minutes plus any allocated concurrent or allocated group therapy minutes. So providers must determine if changes in the intensity of therapy, as just described, would cause the resident to be classified into a different RUG-4 category. However, what do we mean by RUG-4 categories? On slide 16, we offer a bit of a shortcut for understanding what it means to change to a different therapy category. As you can see, the RUG-4 therapy category is captured by the second character in the therapy RUG code. For example, a person in an ultra-high rehab category will have a U as the second character in the therapy RUG code. If that second character changes to a V, for example, then this would be classified as a change in the therapy RUG category. If the U remains the same, but the third character were to change from an A to a C, or vice versa, then this would not constitute a change in the therapy category. As noted earlier, a COT OMER is necessary if the therapy received during the COT observation period would be sufficient for the patient to be classified into a different RUG-4 category. Therefore, if the patient's RUG-4 category would not change, then a COT OMER need not be completed. As a more precise example, if a resident is classified into rehabilitation very high and his RTM were to increase from 510 minutes on the previous assessment to 600 minutes during the COT observation period, assuming all else is equal, then a COT OMER would not be required as the resident's RTM is still reflective of the reimbursable therapy minutes necessary to qualify for rehabilitation very high. Moving to slide 17, providers should consider the following process for determining if a COT OMER may be necessary. First, providers should consider whether or not the resident is receiving any skilled therapy services. If the answer is no, then no COT OMER would be required. If the answer is yes, then providers should consider whether or not the therapy provided to the resident during the COT observation period was consistent with the patient's current RUG-4 classification. For example, if the patient was classified into category rehabilitation high, did the resident receive between 325 and 499 reimbursable therapy minutes during that week, and was at least one rehabilitation discipline provided for 5 days during that week? If the answer is yes, then no COT OMER is required. If the answer is no, due either to the number of RTM or the number of days each therapy discipline was provided, then a COT OMER would be necessary, and the new RUG would be billed from the first day of the relevant COT observation period. I would take this opportunity to note that in addition to the questions on this process chart, providers should also be asking themselves the most important question that is not listed here, which is why. Why did the resident experience a change in therapy? Was the resident too sick to perform the requisite therapy? Were there more refusals during that week than normal? Why were there so many refusals? Did they receive the proper pain medication to ensure they could perform the therapy appropriately? Asking why, when such changes occur, can help ensure that fewer such changes occur unnecessarily, that patients receive a consistent level of care, and that patient issues are identified earlier so as to prevent them from becoming worse. Returning to the slides, on the next two slides, we provide examples of how one might complete a COT evaluation for a given case to determine if a COT OMER is necessary. I can tell you that the chart in front of you is simply a spreadsheet with some simple formulas to calculate total RTMs and such. Nothing complicated, but it does provide a visual example of how you might keep track of a resident's therapy to determine if a COT OMER would be necessary. On slide 18, the patient's current RUG-4 therapy classification is an ultra-high rehab. However, after reviewing the number of RTM and other therapy qualifiers, we find that the resident did not meet the RTM requirement for ultra-high rehab. Instead, the resident only qualifies for very high rehab. Therefore, a COT OMER would be required. Moving to slide 19, the only real difference here is that the resident's starting therapy category is high rehab. As shown in the chart, the resident again qualifies for very high rehab due to the therapy provided to the resident. As such, a COT OMER would be necessary to classify the resident into the higher rehab category. We use these examples to demonstrate that a COT OMER can be used to classify a resident into a lower or higher therapy category. In terms of billing and payments, as noted on slide 20, the COT OMRA establishes a new RUG and new payment retroactively back to the beginning of the COT observation period for which the COT OMRA was completed and continues until the next scheduled or unscheduled PPS assessment. In other words, a COT OMRA retroactively establishes a new RUG beginning on day one of the COT observation period for which the COT OMRA was completed. For example, if a resident's last assessment had an ARD of day 30, the COT observation period would begin day 31, assuming that last assessment was not an EOT with resumption. If at the end of the COT observation period, which in this case would be day 37, the provider were to determine that a COT OMRA was necessary, then a COT OMRA would be completed and the new RUG payment resulting from the COT OMRA would be billed from day 31 and forward until the next scheduled or unscheduled PPS assessment. Moving to slide 21, there seem to be remaining questions related to residents who might index maximize into a non-therapy RUG group, even though they are receiving skilled therapy services. To be clear, when we use the term index maximize, we mean a case where a resident meets the qualifying criteria for both a therapy and non-therapy RUG, and the per diem payment for the non-therapy RUG is higher than the per diem payment for the therapy RUG. For example, if a patient in an urban facility were to simultaneously qualify for both HB2 with an FY 2012 per diem payment of approximately $397 and RHB with an FY 2012 per diem payment of approximately $376, then the facility would bill for HB2. As noted on slide 21, even if a resident index maximizes into a non-therapy RUG, the provider must still perform a change of therapy evaluation, which is to consider the potential necessity of a COT OMRA, so long as the patient is still receiving skilled therapy services. Put plainly, a COT OMRA should be considered for any patient receiving any amount of skilled therapy services, no matter what RUG group they might classify into for billing purposes. However, as noted on slide 22, a COT OMRA is only required in such cases that changes in the intensity of therapy provided to the resident during the COT observation period are such that it would change the resident's RUG category used for billing. Consider the two examples on slide 22. In the first case, a COT OMRA is not required because even though there are changes to the intensity of therapy the resident received that would impact on the resident's therapy RUG category, the resident's RUG classification used for billing remains unchanged. In contrast, in the second example on slide 22, a COT OMRA would be required because the changes in the intensity of therapy provided to the resident during the COT observation period are sufficient to change both the resident's therapy RUG category and the resident's RUG classification used for billing. With all the basics in place, we can now turn to some of the recent clarifications that we have made with regard to the COT OMRA policy. The first, as noted on slide 23, is related to the necessity of the COT OMRA around the day of discharge. The clarification that we have issued is that if day 7 of the COT observation period is also the day of discharge, then a COT OMRA would not be required. To be clear, if the COT observation period ends prior to discharge, then the COT OMRA may be required. However, if the patient is discharged from Part A on or prior to day 7 of the COT observation period, then no COT OMRA would be required. The second clarification on this slide refers to the relationship between the COT OMRA and scheduled PPS assessments. As stated there, if the ARD of a scheduled PPS assessment is set for on prior to day 7 of the COT observation period, then no COT OMRA would be required. We understand that the major change here is where we say on or prior to, while in the current MDS manual it only refers to prior. This is a change that should appear in the April update of the RAI manual. We want to take this opportunity to formally clarify that if the ARD for a scheduled PPS assessment, and it really should say scheduled PPS assessment used for payment, to be consistent with the way this concept is discussed in the proposed and final rules for FY 2012 and as discussed above on slide 14. But if the ARD for a scheduled PPS assessment used for payment is set for on or prior to day 7 of the COT observation period, then no COT OMRA would be required. We would note, in response to questions we have received prior to this call, that this does not eliminate the option for combining these two assessments. It only clarifies that this is not a requirement. The final clarification we will discuss with regard to the COT OMRA is related to the completion of the resident interview questions as noted on slide 24. A number of providers told us that there will be cases where setting the ARD of the COT OMRA might not be possible on day 7 due to various logistical issues. We heard this concern and responded by clarifying that the ARD for the COT OMRA could be set for day 7 of the COT observation period. That is, that the assessment could be opened and the ARD inputted into item A2300 after day 7 has passed. An example we have used, and we will discuss this concept more broadly in just a minute, is if day 7 of the COT observation period happens to fall on July 4th and the MDS coordinator is not there to set the ARD for the assessment that day. We have clarified that the assessment can be opened and the ARD set for day 7 the following day. However, this raised concern over the interview questions on the assessment. To balance the concern of providers with regard to setting the ARD properly against the importance of actually hearing from the patient on the assessment, which was one of the major improvements to the MDS assessment in the transition to MDS 3.0, we have clarified that the interviews on the assessment may be completed 1 to 2 days after the ARD of the COT OMRA. We do not expect that this will occur very often, but we want to encourage providers to make every possible effort to provide an opportunity for the resident's voice to be heard. Again, this is one of the major improvements with the MDS 3.0, and we do not want to compromise that improvement for the sake of logistical concerns. We hope that this clarifies our policy with regard to the patient interviews in these rare cases. Switching gears a bit, slide 25 discusses a clarification we have made with regard to co-treatment within SNFs. As a formal definition, co-treatment refers to a case of two clinicians, which is two therapists, two therapy assistants, or some combination thereof, from different disciplines, treating one Part A resident at the same time with different treatments. For example, if a speech-language pathologist and an occupational therapist do a meal with a patient, the OT is working on feeding skills and fine motor coordination of the utensils, while the SLP is working on swallowing skills. This would be an example of a proper co-treatment session. In such cases of co-treatment, both disciplines may code the full treatment session. Therefore, in the example just presented, both the OT and the SLP could code the full session as individual therapy. Moving to slide 26, we would note that all policies regarding the mode, modalities, and student supervision must be followed. We would also note that the decision to co-treat should be made on a case-by-case basis, and the need for co-treatment should be well documented in the plan of care for each patient. This is because co-treatment, as defined here, would only be appropriate for specific clinical circumstances and not necessarily for every patient. Turning back to recent clarifications, we want to discuss two other areas where we have issued clarifications. The first is with regard to setting the ARD for scheduled and unscheduled PPS assessments. As noted on slide 27, for scheduled PPS assessments, the ARD for such assessments must be set for a day within the ARD window for that scheduled assessment, including grace days, by the end of the allowable ARD window for that assessment, including grace days. In other words, the decision for which day within the ARD window will be used for the ARD of the scheduled assessment must be made by the end of the ARD window. The distinction we hope to draw here is between the ARD being set for a given day, which really is referring to the actual date listed in item A2300, and the ARD being set on a given day, which is referring to the day the decision is made for which day the ARD will be set for. We feel that this provides sufficient flexibility to providers to set the ARDs for their assessments in such a manner as to capture the most accurate assessment of the resident's condition without compromising the overall integrity of the assessment. That is a big phrase for us here, without compromising the integrity of the assessment. As much of the PPS assessments are used to set payments for providers, they are also used to capture quality items and help give us a better idea of the type of patients that providers are treating. By ensuring that you are capturing the most accurate and appropriate information on your assessments, you can help us to get a better idea of the types of patients being treated within SNFs and the manner in which they are being treated, which then ultimately influences our policies going forward. We also have an example on slide 27, which outlines what I had said earlier regarding setting the ARD on the assessment by the end of the assessment window. Just to highlight the last part of that example, providers should be aware that once outside the ARD window, the ARD on the assessment cannot be set for any earlier than the day the decision is made. To return to the distinction we made earlier, in the case that the ARD is not set by the end of the ARD window, then the ARD set for date and set on date must be the same. Moving to the discussion of unscheduled assessments on slide 28, for the COT OMRA, EOT OMRA, and SOT OMRA, the decision for which day within the allowable ARD window the ARD of the assessment will be set for may be made after the window has passed. We have an example there similar to the one I provided earlier, except here it is related to the EOT OMRA. We have been asked how long after the ARD window has passed can facilities open the assessment and set the ARD. While we have not given any specific time frame for when this decision must be made, we would again return to the concept of not compromising the integrity of the assessment. Specifically, returning to the idea of capturing the patient's voice, we expect that facilities will only use this added flexibility in the case of unscheduled assessments when it is necessary, and that doing so will not compromise the provider's ability to complete the assessment accurately and including the patient's voice. We now turn to the second area of clarification, for which I will turn back to Penny Gershman.
Thanks, John. We have received many questions about the leave of absence policy and how it relates to unscheduled assessments, and specifically the COT and EOT OMRAs. Before we discuss the unscheduled assessments, let's look at slide number 29 and talk about the leave of absence, or LOA, policy and its effect on the scheduled PPS assessment. The Medicare assessment schedule is adjusted to exclude the leave of absence days when determining the ARD for a given assessment. For example, if a resident leaves the facility on day 27 of his stay, which is Wednesday, at 6 p.m., and returns to the same facility the next day, Thursday, at 9 a.m., Wednesday becomes a Medicare non-billable day. The Medicare schedule is adjusted, and Thursday becomes day 27 of the resident's stay. Therefore, that Wednesday would not have been a day that could have been used as the ARD for the resident's 30-day assessment. On the contrary, as explained on slide number 30, the unscheduled PPS assessments, meaning the SOT, EOT, or COT OMRA, the days which a resident experiences an LOA must be counted towards the ARD for a given unscheduled assessment. Let's explain this with the example where Mrs. L doesn't receive therapy on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and goes to the ER at 9 p.m. on Wednesday, and returns to the facility on Thursday at 10 a.m. Regardless of whether Mrs. L gets therapy on Thursday, the EOT OMRA would be required with an ARD set for Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. Let's give an example of how a leave of absence may affect the COT OMRA. Slide 31 addresses this. As a reminder, days during which a resident experiences an LOA must be counted toward the ARD for the COT OMRA. For example, let's say that a facility chose November 7th as the ARD for Mr. B's 30-day assessment. The COT observation period would begin on November 8th. But let's say Mr. B went to the ER on November 9th at 11 p.m. and returned to the facility at 2 p.m. on November 10th. Regardless of this LOA, day 7 of the COT observation period would remain November 14th. To be specific, when a leave of absence occurs, the COT evaluation process and payment implications remain unchanged. Slides 32 and 33 include several other common questions we've received. First, can the ARD of an unscheduled PPS assessment be set for a leave of absence day? And the answer is yes. It is possible that the ARD for a given unscheduled PPS assessment may be set for a leave of absence day. Second, if a resident experiences an LOA during the observation period for an assessment, can the services provided to that resident during the LOA be coded on the MDS? And the answer is yes. These services may be coded on the MDS, although only in the cases where doing so wouldn't violate any other provisions of the RAI manual or other SNF guidelines. For example, as discussed on slide number 34, if Mrs. S. received therapy on Monday morning but would leave the SNF to go to the ER on Monday at 9 p.m. and return to the SNF on Tuesday at 11 a.m., the therapy that she received on Monday could be coded on the MDS as part of the therapy look-back for the COT with an ARD set for Thursday. This brings us to the end of our formal presentation. As you can see, additional training resources can be found at the websites listed on slide 35. Thanks.
Thank you, Penny. We have now completed the presentation portion of this call, and we will move on to the question and answer session. Before we begin, I would like to remind everyone that this call is being recorded and transcribed. Before asking your question, please state your name and the name of your organization. In an effort to get to as many of your questions as possible, we ask that you limit your question to just one. All right, Holly, you may open the line for questions.
All right, we will now open the lines for a question and answer session. To ask a question, press star followed by the number one on your touch-tone phone. To remove yourself from queue, please press the pound key. Please state your name and organization prior to asking a question and to pick up your handset before asking your question to assure clarity. Please note that your line will remain open during the time you are asking your question, so anything you say or any background will be heard in the conference. Your first question comes from the line of Laura Lesioni.
Hi. I just wanted to ask John a question. If I come into work and I'm going to attend my PPS meeting, and today happens to be the last day that I can set a 30-day, so it's day 33, and depending on how the patient does that day, I'm going to use either day 32 or 30-day for my ARD. But I get called away, say my wife is having a baby, and I get called away. And I don't return to the facility for 2 days, maybe even 3 days. How do I set that ARD?
That's a really good question. This is John, just to make sure everyone's clear. There's two things I would say. First is that I would, to directly answer your question as to how you set the ARD, there are two main ways of doing so. You can open the assessment in its electronic form and actually input a date into A2300, or you can take a paper version of the MDS and actually input a date into A2300. Okay, and then that would constitute setting the ARD. As far as the specific scenario that you had provided, I would also say that there's not one I don't believe that there's anything which identifies one person as the person that must set the ARD. I think this is something that's just been taken by facilities as, you know, as sort of delegating responsibilities. So if someone else were there and you were to say, hey, I've left the building, I'm not going to be back for 2 days, can you get a paper form of the MDS and put this resident's, you know, name, number, and everything like that, and put this as for A2300, then that would constitute setting the ARD. I think that would be sort of a prudent way of dealing with it.
Okay, so the facility must come up with a way to set the ARD for scheduled assessment, no matter what the circumstances.
Right.
And does the paper, if I put it on paper, does that paper have to be maintained, or can someone take that piece of paper and put it into the computer, you know, a few days later?
Oh, that's fine. No, yeah, as long as it's set on that day, then you can input it into the electronic record if that's how your facility is, you know, going to eventually send over the record.
And you could discard your proof that you set it on a paper.
No, the actual paper that you use should be going into the patient's record. It shouldn't be disposed of in any way.
Oh, that would be a separate piece of paper in addition to the electronic record?
Right. To demonstrate that the ARD was set on the day that it was given. So you'd want to maintain that as part of the patient's record. But then you would submit the electronic assessment for the MDS.
Thank you very much.
One more question.
When you were referring to slide 12 about the EOT OMRA, and you said if therapy is the only thing skilling that resident, if they had missed, let's say, just 1 day or 2 days, so let's say they did therapy Monday through Friday. They were scheduled for discharge on Sunday, but Saturday they refused, and they wouldn't have had therapy on Sunday. You're saying that the last cover day of Med-A would then be the same day they last had therapy? So how would we bill then for that Saturday if they refused? Because they didn't miss a consecutive 3 days.
Can you clarify? I'm not sure what – I got lost in some of the days. I also got lost when I was trying to go back to the slide.
Okay, so if I have a resident who was receiving therapy and they're planning to be discharged on Sunday, we're not going to give them therapy on Sunday, it's the day of discharge, and they happen to refuse on Saturday. When you were going over this slide, you said that if therapy is the only thing skilling that resident and they miss therapy but not the three consecutive days, that the last day would be the same as the last covered day under Medicare. So how would we bill for the day that they refuse therapy?
Right. In the case where the case that you're presenting is a case where the resident, you thought there was a planned discharge for Sunday, they refuse Saturday, their only skill was therapy, and that they had not missed the three consecutive, so let's say they got therapy on Friday, right?
Correct.
If the resident, I think it's a good question. I would actually want to email it in. I mean, instinctively, I would say that, if it's an unplanned discharge on that Saturday, then you might want to go that way. But if you're still maintaining the discharge for Sunday, then this, I wouldn't necessarily say an EOT OMRA would be required in that case. But if you want to email that question in, then we can actually put something out as a formal clarification for that specific scenario.
Okay.
It's an interesting scenario.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
Your next question comes from the line of Sonia Carollo.
Yes, I have a question related to the change of therapies. If I have a patient that will be discharged on the 15th day and they will not require a 14-day assessment for payment, and the change of therapy is also scheduled on day 14, can I just do a change of therapy without combining it with the 14-day PPS assessment, or must they still be combined?
No, you would at that point, and let me just be very cautious here, as long as you absolutely know that person will be out of Part A by day 15, then yeah, you can just do the COT, and because you wouldn't need to bill anything beyond day 14. So you could just do the COT in that case. But if that person was in for even day 15, even just that one day,
right?
Okay, then you would need to have that 14-day assessment to be able to bill that day.
Okay. And then they must be combined.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Bonnie Netter.
Yes, I have a question on slide 5. The very last question about the ARD of a scheduled assessment is set after the unscheduled assessment. Now, it says the scheduled assessment is deemed valid. I understand that. But when you say payment is set as if the assessments had been combined properly, what does that mean from a billing perspective? Do we bill just the unscheduled assessment through the end of that particular payment period?
Right. If you had, let's say that the two assessments had been combined properly, and let's say they were an EOT and a 14-day, say. Well, if that were the case, and let's say they were combined with an ARD of day 13. If they were combined on day 13, the EOT would really be the thing that was controlling payments, and it would continue through the 14-day payment window. So in that sense, that's how the billing would be affected, that the EOT would control the payment through that 14-day window as if they had been combined.
Okay, so when we bill it, we bill just the unscheduled assessment with that AI code and
right.
No penalties involved.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Richard Fabing.
Hi. My question is a situation where you have an EOT assessment at the tail end of a month, and you had billed an end-of-month claim using a HIPS code that would have an 04 for the assessment indicator, and now the third or fourth day, conceivably, of the next month, they resume therapy. And under what I've read, it sounds like when they do the end of therapy resumption, The only thing that it would seem that now I've got to have a HIPS code with an A as the last character of the assessment indicator. But would that, since it's a modification to the end of therapy, what happens with the HIPS code assessment indicators? Do I just let the prior one stand and then the next month bill the days with the HIPS code that has an assessment indicator ending in A?
Richard, that's a really good question. I don't want to say just let it go with the old HIPS code if it's no longer accurate, because that actually will affect a lot of the data analysis and things that we do as far as, you know, looking at what AI codes are present and the types of assessments. So what I'm going to actually ask, because we've gotten this question from a number of people and we want to make sure that we provide a clear formal clarification in terms of how to bill it, if you could actually just email me the question so it reminds me to add this to the clarification document that we're preparing. My email, most of you on this phone call probably know it, but if not, it's John, J-O-H-N, dot Kane, K-A-N-E, which I did not realize, at cms.hhs.gov. Again, that is J-O-H-N dot Kane, K-A-N-E, at cms.hhs.gov. Again, Richard, thank you for that question, and it'll definitely be something that we clarify soon.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Terry Racer.
Hi, John. Terry Racer from Select Plus. How are you?
Doing well. How are you, Terry?
Good. I have a question on, or not really a question, but a statement on slide 22. Talking about the CA maximization.
Okay.
Actually, it's 21 and 22 when you were given the example of the HB2 being like 397 and the RHB being 376. Isn't it important for the RNACs or the MDS coordinators to know what the CMI is for each of these rug classifications? Because you won't know which one's higher if you don't know what the CMI is.
Right. The CMI would be the more direct way of evaluating which one is higher or lower. So that's a very good point as far as which of the rugs would be higher. What we're giving here is probably a little more simplistic way of looking at the VIX maximization, but you're absolutely right that you would look at which of the CMI, on that CMI chart that, you know, is out there, as far as which of the CMIs are higher or lower, and you'd bill whichever one has the higher CMI.
Okay. Thank you.
That's Abdul. You're absolutely right, Terry. Thank you for bringing that up.
Sure.
Your next question comes from the line of Ann Gelforge.
Oh. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, my question refers to slide number. It's right in the beginning, where the CLT slide, where you say, if the first day of the look-back period of the CO2 should occur after the last day of the ARD of a resident's TPS, last TPS assessment, how can the ARD of the next scheduled TPS be the same as the CLT on day 7 that you say on slide 15?
One second, I'm just flipping over to it.
It's slide 23, I'm sorry.
Oh, 23, okay.
Yeah,
I think that was on slide 15, but...
If the ARD of a scheduled PPS assessment is the same on...
Oh, here we go.
...or prior to day 7, how can that be the same when you have to wait till after that first 7 days before you set the ARD for the CLT assessment?
Well, you don't... Just to be very clear, this is John again, but just to... Yeah, I know my voice is probably recognizable. I just want to make it clear. If... It's not necessary that you wait until after that 7th day. We would encourage facilities, and you should be checking your therapy levels every day to make sure that these people are on pace to make you know, the required RTM and the required days and all the other therapy qualifiers. So it shouldn't be something that you necessarily have to wait until after day 7. The reason that we issued that clarification was really to provide that flexibility for the cases, such as the case that the first caller raised, where, you know, someone, you know, in my case, having a baby and wouldn't be there. And so, you know, I might not be able to be there on that 7th day, and for whatever reason we couldn't set the ARD that day, then you can go back and do it. But it's not something that would necessarily have to occur.
So you should, we would expect that facilities would know in most cases whether or not the COT at the end of that week before you actually hit that day seven.
Okay, so basically you're saying you don't have to wait till after the ARD period to look at the change of therapy.
No, in fact, we would encourage people to be looking at them as they go so that if the RNAC were to say, hey, you know, you're not going to be making your therapy for this week, the therapist might be able to explain why they're not, or to explain, no, we actually will. We're actually making up a missed therapy session. We're going to be making it up at the end of this week. So we really hope that there's that level of communication and foresight into this process.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Christy Campbell.
Hello?
Christy, your line is open. And that question has been withdrawn. Your next question comes from the line of Janice Martin.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, my name's Janice. I'm from Metalogis Plymouth, and I'm just checking to make sure I don't have to do a change of therapy. If during the observation period you have a resident that misses 3 days of therapy, so you do the end of therapy along with the resumption, and that resets the clock then for the change of therapy, correct?
You are correct.
So
I don't have to worry. Actually, let me just make sure of something. As long as the ARD for the EOT is set for a day that is either on or prior to day seven. So if it was set for, say, day eight, if it was set for the day after day seven, then you'd have to do both. But as long as the EOT ARD is set for on or prior to day seven, then you'd be fine.
Okay. That's what I wanted to know. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Monica Ogden.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. This is Jennifer. I'm the MDS coordinator at Ripley Crossing, and I do have a question. Say we have a schedule assessment set for day 15, and we're looking at the change of therapy for 11-17 on day 22. Could I set the ARD for day 22, or do I have to wait for the 3 days after and set it for day 23, 24, 25?
I'm sorry, are you talking for a COT or for an EOT?
For a change of therapy.
For change of therapy, there's really only one day that's allowed for the ARD, and that's that day seven.
That's at day seven. So
right. Okay. The day one, two, or three is in relation to the EOT.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
No problem.
Your next question comes from the line of Avery Millott.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, my question is about slide 23. It's regarding the recent clarification on COT OMRA. It says there if day 7 of the COT observation period is also the day of discharge, then a COT OMRA would not be required. Now, would that same clarification also be, can we apply that same clarification to if day 7 is also the date of exhaustion? Like day 7 is the 100th day. Hello?
Yeah, I'm sorry, we were just...
So it would be the day of discharge from Part A?
Yes, the day of this... Well, day seven is the 100th day.
Right, so I mean, but in so much as 100 is the day of discharge from Part A.
Yes. So if day seven is the exhaustion date and the resident remained long-term at the facility, would that same clarification apply? Meaning, do we have to do a COT or do we have to?
If day 100 is a Medicare available day, then that would count toward the EOT requirements. It's only the only, when we talk about the day of discharge, we're talking about that discharge from Part A, which would be the non-billable day.
Okay, so physical discharge.
Right.
So, okay. In your example, it would have to be day 101.
Okay. Okay, so if day 100 is the seventh, if day seven of the COT observation is also day 100 of the resident's stay, meaning date of exhaustion, then you still have to do a COT.
Yes.
Okay.
If day seven is day 101,
then no.
Well, okay. All right, and I have a second question about the EOTR. So if you have a resident that's the only reason for skilled coverage is skilled rehabilitation, Friday, Saturday, no therapy was provided. Monday, resident refused. And Thursday, the resident was resumed therapy. Those 3 days will have to be billed, you know, using the nursing RUG scores. But if you don't have any other skilled nursing services, you know, that would rise up to the upper 52 categories, then would providers be allowed to bill the lower 14 categories?
It's whatever's going to come off of the EOT is what you're going to bill.
Okay.
So you complete the EOT, and whatever comes off of that is what you're going to bill.
Okay, even if it means billing a default like a PI. All right. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Joanne Heiss.
Hi. My question has to do with the 7-day successive payment window. Has recently come upon the fact that, just for example, the ARD for the 5-day assessment is the 30th of the month, and your 14-day assessment is done on with an ARD of 10-7. On day, you count out your 7 days, and on day 15, I'm still in my rug category, let's say. I then go to that's 7 days. Day 14, I'm still on RU. Day 21, I have now dropped a category. When does my payment change? Does the payment change for just the last successive days, or does it go all the way back to the day after the ARD of the last assessment?
It goes back to the past 7 days.
Okay.
So it's that day one of that COT observation period that you were using for that COT OMRA.
Right. Because it's really confusing in the fact that one of the prior transmittals we've gotten from CMS, I assume, and this was from the follow-up information on the August 23rd provider training.
Right.
On questions number 3, 5, and I think it's 23, it is really like clarifying mud, sir. I don't mean to be disrespectful in any way, but I interpret it as the 7-day window is that the payment would only go down for the last 7 days, not all the way back to the last ARD.
Right. So, I don't remember the exact days you used your example, but let's say your 30-day was set for day 31. Your COT observation period begins on day 32. It ends on day 38. No COT is required. The next one begins on day 39, ends on day 45, if my math is right, which it may not be. But, ends on day 45. Let's say a COT is due at that point. It only goes back to day 39. It doesn't go all the way back to day 31.
Because this is something that our software vendor has basically said, oh, no, this is the way it reads, and that's why we wanted to get clarification because, is meaning that we're providing the therapy for the first 21 days at that higher level that now we're not going to get reimbursed for is what it actually looks like in that first provider call. So it is only the last 7 days prior to that ARD of that change of therapy over that your payment is actually either reduced or increased.
Right. It goes back to day one of that COT observation period.
Yeah, the payment is reflective of the COT observation period. The COT observation period is set by the ARD of the last assessment.
Is there any place that's actually in writing?
We can look at the clarifications memo, and if it's not clear, we'll try to clear that up. You referred to questions number 3, 5, and 23?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
And then it's on slide 20. Because when you look at that, the other thing that's also inferred on there is that if you have a change of therapy OMRA and it is same window for a scheduled assessment, is it has to combine both of them. Yet on slide 23, it says I can do one or the other.
Right. The reason for that is because neat case where the ARD of the COT is actually dependent upon the ARD of other assessments, whereas the ARD for other kinds of unscheduled, such as the EOT or SOT, are dependent on other types of events, like the beginning of therapy or the end of therapy. So that's why there's a little bit of a difference when it comes to the COT.
All right, so consequently, if I'm now at day 28 and I've already set my assessment reference date for my 30-day assessment for day 28, and when we do our look back, it has given me going, oh, gosh, they're going to drop a rug schedule. I don't have to make it a change of therapy and a scheduled PPS. I can make it one or the other.
That's
or
right.
I can combine them.
That's
correct?
Right. Well, not one or the other. It's either you do the combined or you do the 30-day at that point.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. I didn't mean to change the therapy because the 30
days. I just want to be that clear because someone else might not have understood that when I was that. So, but yeah, you're absolutely right.
Very much. You've clarified and answered my question. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Delisa Baev.
Good afternoon. I've got a quick question in relation to COT and leave of absence days. I had an instance I was lucky enough to, I was able to avoid, and my therapy rug did not increase or decrease, but it made me realize that it was possible, and I'm not real sure what to do if it does ever happen. If I have a COT review that falls on a leave of absence day, I do understand that I am required to complete that COT for that day. However, if this also falls in the window, say day 57 of a scheduled PPS assessment, that and I can't do that scheduled assessment for that ARD date because that is not a billable day, what do I do?
So you're saying that if it was day 57, that 57 would actually shift forward, and so it would no longer be in the window.
Okay.
So if you had the COT that was due on day 57 and that would happen to be the LOA day, that LOA date actually doesn't exist as far as the scheduled assessment is concerned, and 57 actually shifts forward one day. So you're actually, in a sense, doing it on what you might call 56 star, and the actual 60-day window begins the following day. So you'd be fine to do one assessment and then the other.
Oh. You know what? That didn't even register with me. I appreciate that. Thank you.
No problem.
Your next question comes from the line of Elena Kurth.
Hi, this is Bridget calling from St. Joseph. Can you hear me?
Yep,
yes.
We can hear you.
Okay, thank you. I had a patient admitted with to a skilled nursing facility for therapy and IV antibiotics for the 5-day MDS, which we used the Great Day 8. He fell into a very high. For the 14-day, which is also the 7-day, I just did a 14-day MDS. He also fell in very high, but I also did I combined a 14-day with end of therapy because therapy was discontinued. So he's now still on our unit for IV antibiotics only. Do I still need to then do a change of therapy?
Absolutely not, no.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that because I saw your note on page 21, and I just wanted to make sure, since on the 14-day I did say end of therapy assessment, that no further assessments were needed.
Right. Now, once you've done the EOT, they're no longer – you don't have to consider whether they change or not. No.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Charlie Hing.
Hi. Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
My question is regarding something that people are calling the day 4 black hole with regard to a short stay assessment. In the REI manual, it talks about the short stay algorithm, and under ARD requirement number 5, it says it must be no more than 3 days after the start of therapy. So if you have a scenario where your therapy start date is 10/22 and your ARD is 10/25, assuming that all other short stay criteria is met, will the ARD in this scenario prevent the assessment? I've heard it referred to as the day 4 black hole. Does 3 days after the start of therapy also include the date therapy was started?
This is actually something that we had heard about before from a few people, when it's something that we're actually taking a look at. If you could actually email me the question, so that we can kind of add this to our role as far as how we want to clarify it, that would be really helpful. Again, my email address is john@cms.hhs.gov. I appreciate you bringing this up, Charlie. It is something that we're looking at now.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Joelle Benetton.
This is Joel Vanney with Care Centers Management Consulting in Johnson City, Tennessee. And I want a couple of clarifications, if I could get, please, on slide 27.
Sorry, Joel, you only get one. No, just joking with you.
Yeah. I've already communicated with John on several questions. I appreciate you taking more from me today.
That's fine.
No problem.
So now you're limiting. Oh, goodness gracious.
Right. Well, we do ask that
get me off
people
track
try to restrain there. Themselves just a little bit so everybody gets a chance.
Okay. Just quickly then, on slide 27 and 28, you know, the discussion today is centered around this situation where being outside the assessment of a scheduled assessment to set the assessment reference date and having to be physically present within that window in order to set that date or to encode it somewhere on paper or electronically, so forth. And I just want you to, if you all would consider, please, how we could really appropriately select the last day of an assessment reference window as an appropriate assessment reference date if we're not allowed the full 24 hours of that day to pass. So, for instance, in facilities that track their ADL scores 24/7, multiple episodes per shift, I would not know in that facility until the last day of an assessment reference period, a scheduled assessment reference period, had passed, to know whether or not the last day of that assessment reference period was appropriate to choose, specifically in relationship to the ADL scores, which means that effectively eliminates that day for me in actually appropriately or intellectually choosing that particular day. So I wonder if that would be a consideration for you all in relationship to allowing us more freedom at the end of that assessment reference period to select days within that period, even though we may be outside the window physically. And then also just a clarification in relationship to the COT OMRA. And of course, you know, we're allowed the freedom to be outside that window, but the conversation today has slipped over into suggesting that it would be better to be prior to not compromise the integrity of the assessment and so forth that we're talking about here, not compromise the residents' ability to give their voice. And yet on page 2-50 of the current RA manual, it's maybe something you all are going to be clarifying, but in relationship to the directions that were given for completing the COT, it says there, quote, an evaluation of the necessity for a COT OMRA must be completed after the COT observation period is over. It must be completed. So that ought to be a consideration as well, that we're really actually being told in the manual we have to wait until after the COT observation period is over with in relationship to selecting that particular assessment. And then just quickly on the other slide, slide 11, in relationship to the EOT, you say on that slide that we're not required to consider possible ADL changes when determining if resumption therapy will occur. My question is, when I do an EOT and that slips then into an EOTR, on the resumption, if I'm billing at a rehab rug there for resumption, clearly I'm using the rehab rug score from the prior assessment. But my question is, which ADL score would I use? Would I use the ADL score from the prior assessment or from the EOT? Thank you very much.
Angel, this is John. Thank you for your questions. You know, as always, your questions are just superb. Your first question is something that we're looking at, and so I don't want to comment on anything right now, but it is something that we're looking at as far as the ADLs and the 24-hour rule and how the scheduled assessment ARD is set and everything like that. So it is something that we're looking at. So that's pretty much all I can say at the moment.
Great.
As far as the second thing, it actually is something on our radar because we did want to make sure that people are not looking at this, you know, only after the COT observation period, but are actually this is something that's consistently being monitored throughout the period. So that actually is something that was on our radar. Thank you for bringing that up here so that other people are aware of it. As far as your third point, when you do the EOTR, you're just going to basically be carrying forward that rug from the prior assessment up forward. So you build a non-therapy rug off the EOT, the previous therapy rug, once the therapy resumes, ADLs and all.
So the ADLs that come off of the EOT are inconsequential to my resumption.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Rita Cole.
Hi, this is Tom McCormick from Optima Healthcare Solutions. I had a question with the COT and the day of discharge. I see in the literature that it says it's not required. Does the phrase not required equate to not an option? Like, is it optional to do the COT, or it's not an option at all?
No, when we say not required, we mean exactly that. it's not a requirement, but not, but it still is a possibility. So you're not required to do so, but you could make, you could do it if you, if the facility felt it was appropriate.
Okay, so you could do the COT then on the day of discharge if you choose that option. Okay.
Your next question comes from the line of Mike Gorman.
Hi, I have a question clarifying the slide 23, the change of therapy OMRA. And when you say that it doesn't have to be done, so for example, the caller earlier had said if the 30-day MDS is due on day 28 or set for day 28 and there's a change of therapy checkpoint on day 28, you don't have to do the change of therapy OMRA. Is that true even if the therapy that had been provided during the previous 7 days is different than the RUG level that had been established?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Well, that answered my question. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Tara Essman.
Who?
Tara, your line is open.
Oh, thank you. I have a question about what happens if the therapy level is at following an end of therapy. So when the resumption occurs, what happens if the therapy level is not going to be the same? Say they've been on medical hold and they aren't going to be able to come off of that tolerating the same level. How do you deal with that?
If you do, if you, the, I think it actually discusses this in the RAI manual, perhaps it may not be as clear, that if the person is not resuming at the same level, and that is to say that they're not resuming under the same plan of care, then you would have to do the EOT and then an SOT with a new evaluation to determine what level of therapy that person is going to be going into and what the appropriate plan of care would be.
Okay. And then my second question is relating to what happens if, and it kind of is relating to the end of therapy, but when somebody initially comes into the facility and say therapy isn't initiated until day four, does anything have to happen initially, or do we just wait for that first assessment?
You would wait for that first assessment. In fact, the EOT actually, by rule, can't be the first assessment. So you'd be doing the 5 days, the first assessment at that point, and it would just pick up whatever therapy you provided between day four, if it started that day, and the and when you do, when you set the ARD for that first assessment.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Jan Oliver.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep.
Thank you. We have a situation that has just come up, and it has we had planned to see to provide therapy through Monday the 7th, and the client is being skilled through rehab only at this point. However, this morning the physician came through, wrote a unilateral discharge all therapies. We have given a written a written notice that the last covered day would be Monday the 7th, but now we're in this funny situation where without communicating with the team, we have no more therapies and no nursing needs. So in this situation, do we just bill the default rate for those remaining days, or do we need to withdraw that notice and give notice for a different day?
At that point, if the only skilled service is therapy and they're discontinued off therapy on physician order, then that day that they've discontinued therapy is now the day that they've gone off Part A.
Okay, and then how do we then reconcile that with the fact that we are required to give a 3-day notice for discharge off of Part A, and that that notice was given differently?
We'll have to talk to some of our ABN folks that are really experts in this area and get back to you. Would you mind emailing John that question?
Just
as a reminder so that we get back to you?
I certainly can. I realize it was a little bit off topic. Thank you very much.
No, it's certainly okay. On topic. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Nadine Edelman.
Hi. I'm calling from New York State. I'm calling from a SNF that has medically fragile frequent admissions and rehospitalizations. My patients are indicating their displeasure, and I have serious consequences of attempts and multiple attempts to complete multiple BIMs and PHQ-9s. which then have great effect on my case mix, such as going from an HD1 to an HD2 because my PHQ9 answers are different, because my residents have had me in there maybe even weekly performing these assessments. Has CMS considered any implications of this?
We are looking at the resident interviews as far as their frequency and everything like that. It's something that's been brought up by a number of providers, and so it is something that's on our radar that we're looking at as to see if there's some way that we can try and rectify it in the future.
Does that mean soon future? I'm having serious complications fiscally because my residents, I was just in there. Now I'm asking them the BIMS again. I'm doing the PHQ-9 again, and the answers are that they're giving me truly aren't the correct answers. It's really not their voice. It's their frustration at me that I'm back in there again.
Okay. I mean, again, it's something that we are looking at. I wish that I could provide more detail at this point, but it is something that we're trying to look at because, again, we are hearing that, you know, people are frustrated, and so we do want to try and address it as soon as possible. But it's something that we'll have to get back to you on.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Holly, it looks like we have time for one final question.
Okay. Your final question comes from the line of Diana Turkson.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
I wanted to ask about when you said the if the discharge date is day 7 of your COT observation,
yeah,
then you don't need to do it?
No, if day 7 is the same as the day of discharge, then no COT OMER would be required.
But you also said that if the 100, was it day 101, your, day 101 should be day 7 before you decide you don't need it. I don't know if you get my question.
Well, no, if you're discharged from Part A on or prior to the end of the COT observation period, then you do not need to complete the COT OMRA. Okay? If you are discharged from Part A after day 7, then you would need to do the COT OMRA.
Okay. Kind of confused, but I'll process it later.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for questions today. We would like to thank everyone for joining us and for your participation in the question and answer portion of the call. An audio recording and written transcript will be posted FY 2012 RUG 4 Training and Education page of the SNF PPS website at www.cms.gov/snfpps. I would like to thank our subject matter experts for their participation. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you for participating in today's Skilled Nursing Facility Prospective Payment Conference call. You may now disconnect.